AM. I'm Kainani Stevens. We are hearing from head coach Doug Peterson for the first time since free agency as the NFL holds their annual league meetings in Orlando. We'll have a live report a little later in the show as John Osier checks in with us and tells us all he's learned so far at the meetings. Brian Sexton is here with me in studio. We also have a special guest. We're going to start off with big thing one, though. Been there and done that. In regards to those free agents, a lot of them coming from winning teams, head coach Doug Peterson said that was kind of the goal in who they were targeting.
This is the culture that I want to establish in Jacksonville, and this is the reason why you go get guys like Mitch Morse and Eric Armsteads and the Darnell Savages and guys that have been to the postseason. These guys have been captains on their teams, and you know, they've been to Super Bowls, they've been to AFC Championship games. You know, so these guys know how to win, and that's kind of the influx of talent that we want to bring onto this our young roster, guys that have been there, done that.
Been there and done that, Brian. This is something we discussed a lot in the offseason, even the back end of last season. You're setting a culture here, but you also want that winning culture as well, and these guys know what it means to win.
You know, Kai, we've talked about it a lot since last November. You remember when the Jaguars lost to the San Francisco 49ers? It was a disheartening loss, 34-3. And after the game, Doug Peterson said, "We haven't done anything yet." And the resounding thought from his coaching staff, bringing Ryan Nielsen and all the guys they assembled there, to the free agents that they've brought in, has been about the quality of person and the quality of their experience. Whether they've been to Pro Bowls, Super Bowls, been on winning teams, Doug has tried to reinvigorate his locker room and his coaching staff with people of renown, people who have gotten things done. So I'm going to introduce you to somebody who got things done around here for 10 years, and you all know him. Jaguars center Brandon Linder, now retired, joins us today. Hi, Brandon. How are you?
I am doing well.
And you are a svelte 250 pounds.
Yes.
You're getting it done at home now.
I am. Yep. A lot of cardio and just eating protein and veggies.
Do you miss the game?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
Okay.
Of course I miss it, but it was time for me to move on, and I couldn't be happier.
We're going to talk about what you're doing and what you think of the Miller Electric Center. And by the way, it was wow as we walked through it. But you heard Doug. You know, the guys that he brought in, and you know some of them, Mitch Morse and Eric Armstead, guys who have proven themselves on the field and off. You've been in the locker room a lot. Give me a perspective of what it means to bring guys like that in.
Yeah, that's a real exciting to see that you guys signed Mitch Morse. Heck of a player. Great feet, very quick, brings his hips on contact. You'll see that throughout the year. Great in the pass game, great in the run game. So to see that, I mean, and that's where it starts, right at the center position, and he's a smart dude too. So relaying the calls, obviously he'll figure out the plays. And then Eric Armstead, lengthy guy, has a heck of a bull rush, can swim off of it, can go under as well. So now you're just adding another tool there in the D-line.
Can two guys like that who are accomplished come in and have an impact in the locker room in terms of their leadership style, or because they're coming into an established team, is that more difficult?
No, I think when you come in as an established player, you can definitely have an impact on the locker room, right? You've been other places, you've done it, you have a resume to show for. So guys, especially younger guys, right, they're going to look at that, they're going to lean on those guys, so they can definitely have an impact right away.
And Kai, it sounds like Doug Peterson's counting on that.
He sure is. He's also counting on the fact that the way they finished last year will motivate this team going forward. Our second big thing is fuel to the fire, specifically talking about quarterback Trevor Lawrence. Doug says he's been in touch with him, obviously, in the offseason, and he feels like the way they finished is going to motivate Trevor going forward.
Now he's playing meaningful games. He's playing, he's taken the last 2 years, our team, to the right there. And now we got to push through that. And so now it bothers him. That part bothers him, right? Football bothers him. And that's a good thing.
Brian, we always talk about how Trevor seems very even-keeled, but Doug's saying, you know, the way things finished got him bothered, which is what you want to hear. You certainly don't want to hear that he's fine with it. Will this be the motivating factor for him going forward?
Well, it certainly seemed that way on the day that they cleaned out their lockers at the end of last season. Just the look in his eye. And my kids would say Trevor's chill, right? We'll get Brandon's thought on that. You know, he's relaxed. He doesn't get too wound up. He's level. But you could tell that day in the locker room back in January that it was something that bothered him. Brandon, you and I have talked a lot about Trevor in the last couple of months when we connected. You think his upside is incredible. How do you see something like the last six games of last year when nothing seemed to go right, taking a young player and pushing him forward?
Yeah, I mean, his upside's tremendous. And what happened last year, you know, that was a shame. How it fell apart, I have been a part of that, and it's not fun. When I was with Trevor, I mean, he is so invested in this team. All he wants to do is win. That's all he's ever done, high school, college. So you're gonna see a guy that I believe, you know, he's working, doing everything he needs to this offseason, and he's motivated. He's ready to come in and put forth the effort, like I know he's going to, and it just, it takes the right parts, and I think they have it. I think they've gotten it, especially in free agency.
Don't let me put words in your mouth, but I think you maybe said you thought twice about retiring because you wanted the chance to play with this caliber of a quarterback.
No, you're correct. And it, you know, I sometimes think like, man, I wish my career would have aligned with Trevor's because he is that special. And, you know, that center quarterback connection, it's a special connection. So, yeah, I mean, I definitely would have liked to have played more years with Trevor, but that's not the case, and that's all right.
Well, you got enough good years with Blake.
That's right. Yeah, and that's one of my best friends to this day.
One of the fun guys we've had around Jacksonville in the years, Kai.
Our final big thing today is going to be position flexibility. That was something Doug Peterson hammered home yesterday about being important, whether it's in terms of free agents that they brought in or who they're looking at in the draft.
You're starting to see more guys with position flexibility, you know, just like you would offensive linemen, right? You know, guards that can play center, tackles can play both sides, you know, receivers, you can move receivers around. I just think it just helps your overall team, and if you do have an injury at a position, you can plug and play a guy.
Brian, we saw a lot of musical chairs specifically on the offensive line last season, but there are players now that they're bringing back that can play multiple positions, whether it's Ezra Cleveland or others. And also he's talking about the defense, you know, bringing in a Darnell Savage who can play different positions on defense, possibly with different schemes. Is it more about having a good player that can also play other positions or someone that's kind of decent at everything?
Well, I'd like to have a really great player that can do multiple right. things, but you'll take a good player that can do that as well. And in particular, this line of thought goes to Darnell Savage and Antonio Johnson, because both guys can play nickel. In fact, Antonio Johnson's a guy that's probably that big nickel that's more in run support, but Savage can do that as well. We have the perfect guy here in Brandon to talk about positional flexibility, because he came in as a rookie in 2014 and started at right guard. Kicked Ndamukong Suh's butt, if I recall, in week two against Miami. And that was Suh's debut with the Dolphins, and he was the highest paid free agent in history. Not to lay that at your feet, but I remember the day. So the value in being able to do multiple things, and not just in terms of your contract,
right.
but in terms of on the practice field, in the meeting rooms, in a pinch, in a game.
Oh, that's everything. And as a player, all you're trying to do is add value, right? You want that next contract extension, you want to start and play as many years as you can, right? To do that, it's adding value. To be able to, and I'm just going to speak on the offensive
sure.
line. If you could play center, if you could play guard, left guard, right guard, normally that's how you swing in the inside. And then tackle, if you can play both sides and play both at a high level, it's everything. I mean, you can really add value to yourself and, you know, prolong your career in the NFL.
So we've talked a lot about Mitch Morse, and they didn't sign him to come in and be the backup. He's going to come in and be the starter, which means that now Luke Fortner has a chance to learn to play a couple of different positions. How hard will it be for him to go from playing center to learning guard? Do you think he can be effective at that?
Yeah, of course. I think he can be effective. And it's funny, like going from left guard to right guard, it's not as easy as you would think, right? Because it's a completely different stance, completely different mechanics, right? You got to switch your brain. But you can learn that. You can develop that in the offseason, develop that in OTAs, training camp. That's what that's for.
So, Kai, when you bring in a guy like Mitch Morse and you take Luke Fortner and move him around, he's got 33, 34 regular season starts underneath his belt. Now you create depth as well as versatility, which gives Phil Rauscher even more to work with in that offensive line room when we get started here in a couple of weeks.
Maybe adding in the draft as well. So we'll talk a little bit more offensive line a little later in the show. But stay with us here on JagsAm. Coming up after the break, we'll have a report from John Osier at the league meetings. Jaguars fans, gear up at Fanatics.com with all the latest Jag styles. You can shop now and get today's special offers. Fanatics.com officially licensed everything. Ozone. Welcome back to Jags AM. Ozone ditched us last week. He was on vacation. Now he's ditched us again. But this time it's a good reason. He's at the annual league meeting. John, I know you were there talking, hearing from Doug yesterday. That's the first time we've heard from him since free agency. So what was kind of the tone from him and what was the overall message from him?
I think what you guys led with the top was the, you know, the money quote, if you will, talking about bringing in veteran guys. And I think even more than the veteran guy thing, even more than the guys who've been with winning teams, he talked a little when he talked about that, about the swagger. And I think in the last six games of last season, he looked around and wanted guys to take control of the situation and win. And, you know, there were times that didn't happen. So I think guys like Eric Armstead, guys, you know, the six of the players brought in from Green Bay, the Ravens, the Bills, those teams have made 17 postseason appearances over the last five seasons. I think he wants guys who are going to walk out and expect to win rather than hope to win. And there's a subtle difference there, but I definitely think the money quote yesterday was about the swagger and about the need to feel like you're going to win late in the season. That's the defining thing of the offseason to me.
John, I saw a lot of chatter of people interpreting what Doug said, right? Doug is one of those guys that if you read between the lines, he tells you a lot. However, when the conversation got to wide receiver or offensive line and where this team felt like they could still get better, where they might need to add players, where the focus might be on the draft, I felt like Doug was all in on every position, wasn't telling anybody anything. Did you hear something that I didn't? Was he leaning in one direction about where this team still needs to get better in April?
Not really. You get the feeling that they would like I think they have to get better at corner. And I don't think, you know, it wasn't really asked specifically yesterday, but there's still, you feel like they have two guys who, with big time experience, big time pedigree, you feel like they still got one more somewhere in the first couple of days. Beyond that, I think they'd like to get better at receiver, but don't want to force themselves into that situation. Probably that's true at most positions, right? So. I didn't get the idea that they are targeting a certain area. The sweet spot in the middle of the first round, it seems like receiver's going to be there, offensive line's going to be there. I think Doug's looking at it along the lines of, if somebody drops to us, if the situation's there, we'd love to get better, but we can line up, which is probably the way you want to be right now going into the draft.
John, we got some ozone questions for you because you got to check in. Obviously, at the league meetings, they do some of those rule changes. So our first one is about the one they voted on yesterday, the hip drop tackle. So how can refs possibly enforce this new hip drop tackle rule when it's, I mean, they try to enforce a lot of things, so I'm sure they'll find a way. But this one seems a little bit weird. As a defender, what are you allowed to do at this point?
Oh, they'll enforce it. I mean, it's whether it's quote unquote fair, you know. My dad used to know, well, life's not fair, son. You know, so I think that's what you're telling some of the defenders right now. How do you avoid doing that? I guess it's probably the same answer that you had to give to safeties a few years back when you say, well, how do you avoid hitting a receiver in a certain way? Well, you just do it. And in some cases, that means sort of giving up a little more on defense than you want to. I don't think it's great for the, quote, enjoyment of the game. I think you'll see some clunkiness with it. I think defenders may be fined for things they weren't fined for in the past. But this is an era where the league has to continue to gear toward player safety for numerous reasons. First of all, because players should be kept safe. I can't sit here and say that I could look a defensive back or a linebacker in the face and say, hey, the game's getting easier for you now. I think it gets harder, and it'll be tough to adapt, but they'll enforce it. I mean, there'll be penalties and there'll be complaints and there'll be outrage on Twitter, because there's always outrage on Twitter.
And I saw some
That's
of that.
What Twitter
just,
is.
Just a quick thought on that, by the way. You know, remember when they had the rule 2 years ago with the running back and they were going to hit the running back for lowering his head into contact? I haven't seen a whole lot of that the last couple of years. You know, every once in a while when it's blatant, they'll call it. And I can remember there was a great hue and cry about it. How in the world can you do that? And they haven't over-enforced that. My guess is that when it all boils down, there's going to be some really obvious hip drop tackles where guys get hurt, right? Like the one with the tight end from the Ravens. against the Bengals, and that one sure. will be so obvious, but I'm not sure that this is going to be as called as you think.
We'll see how it goes, but yeah. it's a new rule, so they always love to enforce the newest rules. John also hasn't officially been done yet. They've been talking about it as of yesterday. Doug weighed in on it, but the kickoff changes. They didn't see many returns at all on kickoffs last year after they changed the rules, so they're kind of allegedly going to tweak it. They haven't voted on it yet. Do you think that'll go through, and how much will it change things?
Yeah, they voted on it this morning. It actually did go through. So, it seems like it's going to change things a lot. And I saw somewhere where it was called one of the most significant rule changes in NFL history. I don't know if it's that, but it's going to look different. I think the stat was there were no kickoff returned in the Super Bowl. Some people, my old friend Pete Prisco, who cares, just throw the ball in at the 20 and line up. I think you do like to have kickoffs in the game. I think it does add a level of excitement. This one's going to be interesting because if you kick it in a certain area, they have to return it. If you don't kick it in a certain area, you get the ball at the 40. It's going to promote offense. It's going to promote excitement. That's what the league wants. It's definitely something to watch. It'll keep some jobs open on special teams. It'll make it more important, which I think matters to the NFLPA. So it's going to be a factor, and you're going to see that back in the game. I think you'll get a few complaints from the old people like me. I won't complain about it, but I'm an old person. It's going to look sort of clunky at first because guys can't run on the kick. They have to wait. So it's going to look different than what some guy played in high school, right? So it's going to be, that's not football. But, it'll promote the kickoff return. And it does seem to be a place where they can find some middle ground with excitement and player safety. And that's really the whole task of the league right now. The last 7 or 8 years has been about trying to make the game safer without losing the excitement. And this is a move toward that.
For people who aren't familiar with it, just in round terms, basically what they're going to do is have the kickoff coverage team and the front line of the kickoff return team line up 5 yards apart. Then they're not going to be able to move until the ball is caught by the return man. And as John mentioned, if you kick it into the zone, then it will likely be returned. If you don't kick it into that zone, then the ball is 25 yards up the field to the 40-yard line. So there's a penalty. They're really trying to find a safe way to bring the kickoff back in. I heard yesterday there was something like, 4,500 kickoffs 2 years ago. And then last year when some rules changed, they dropped it to 1,300, something like that. I mean, there's a third of the number of kickoffs returned and a third of the number of yards, and they want to bring it back. So you're going to see some of this stuff showing up in stories when we have practice and OTAs as they practice it. It's not easy to envision because it's completely different than anything we've seen in professional football.
That is going to be something to see for sure. When you explain it as physically what that's going to look like when you're kind of frozen until they get the football, it's a completely different dynamic now.
Somebody that trusts wrote that it's the biggest difference, Brandon, in terms of the visual of the game since they moved the goalpost out of the front of the end zone and moved them to the back, and that was in like 1972.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting. I didn't even know about the rule change, and hearing you explain that, I don't know if
it's
like that.
It's a little bit clunky, but they think it's the way to save the kickoffs because the league has been trying to minimize. It's considered to be the most dangerous play in football, right? I mean,
definitely.
Statistically proven, it has become the most dangerous play in football. So they've been legislating it away in recent years with how they moved the kickoff up and all the rules that have minimized the number of kickoff returns. This is a way to sort of create something they think will be safer and still give you the potential to have that big play, field-changing, game-changing kind of moment.
John, I got one more last question for you before we let you go. Do we have any idea what they're doing with 17? Are we still thinking corner? Or are we just guessing still?
Oh, at number 17 in the draft. I continue to figure it'll be corner because I look at the cornerback situation and Darby and Campbell seem like, what I would call resume pedigree guys. You know what they've done. Beyond that, they have Christian Braswell, Monteric Brown, who they like. I haven't been in the fire yet. So to me, it feels like 17. or corner at 17, I'm sorry. At the same time, you can also take that in round two, or round three. So I think it's corner, offensive line. I keep saying I don't think it's receiver, but that's also a possibility. Those would be the three spots that I would guess. So I'll go either corner, offensive line. But what do I know?
Depends on who's there, doesn't it? It always depends on who might slide down the board and be there.
You know it all, John. We
better
appreciate
it. Depend on who's there.
Have a good time in Orlando. We'll see you next week here on Jags AM. Stay here with us. We're going to check in with Brandon Linder a little bit more, go over that offensive line and what he sees out there for the Jags. Stay with us. Move the freight. Magellan Transport voted coolest office space in Jacksonville. You can apply online at www.magellanlogistics.com. Welcome back to Jags AM here in the Hyundai Studios, and we have our special guest Brandon Linder here with us, who's center for the team, offensive lineman for the team, center for many years. The offensive line last year was a bit of a trouble spot for the Jaguars, to say the least. A lot of injuries, a lot of, you know, kind of moving parts. Head coach Doug Peterson said he felt a lot of the issues were the fact that they didn't really have a set lineup, but offensive line, I mean, injuries are going to happen no matter what. How hard is it when you go out there and you don't know who's going to be next to you? Is it a lot different when there's different players and different positions on every game?
Yeah, it is different. And I've been a part of years where the line was like that, where continually revolving door. I've also been a part of lines where we started together the whole year. And you definitely want to be next to the guy. I mean, yes, the backups can have that same kind of, you know, telepathy where I don't even have to say, like AJ Can, like was, you know, I played with him forever. There would be things where I could just literally look at him or get like, just make some sort of audible noise and he would understand what I'm saying, right? So it's everything to have that type of cohesion with each other, but that's not an excuse. You know, everyone still needs to rise to the occasion.
What was it like for you? I know we talked a little bit about the transition from position, especially in the NFL, if maybe you haven't played that position at all or in a long time, but to kind of know that your role is now a different position. Was that an easy transition for you?
It was just something that needed to be worked on. I mean, I started my first 2 years at right guard, and I had played center in high school and in college. And in college, I moved from right guard to right tackle. So I had that kind of, you know, experience at that. But no, it was just taking the off season, you know, learning how to snap at an efficient rate. And then, you know, center, you know, IDing the fronts, IDing the Mike linebackers, you know, kind of taking the calls and spreading them down the line. So it was just that kind of change.
How hard is it if you're the quarterback and you have Cam Robinson, you know, gone for four games and then he's in for eight games, then he's gone for four games, right? You had four different starting left guards. I mean, to be fair to Luke Fortner, who struggled last year, but he had constant turnover next to him. How about the quarterback? You know, when things didn't go well last year, he didn't point fingers, but it had to be tough on him.
Yeah, I mean, he'll never point fingers, but not knowing who is going to be playing on Sunday at that position, you might not think it or say it, but in the back of his head, when he's dropping back, you know, to pass, and he's going through his progressions, making his reads, there might be a little thing in the back of his head, like what's going on over here at the left side, right? Do I need to float, drift more over to the right? So, yes, if everyone can stay together, that's the best case. But again, you have to adjust.
The teams bring in Mitch Morse, you know, who's in Kansas City and Buffalo for a while, a veteran presence. What does that do for a quarterback to have somebody, you know, coming in really commanding in the center and has been there, done that?
Yeah, exactly. Been there, done that. You know, he has the experience. He can, you know, he'll learn the plays, he'll learn the calls very easily, and then they'll create a bond together, and they'll, you know, I'm sure they'll win a bunch of games, which is exciting to see, and that's what you hope happens.
How long does it take to form that bond with the center? So he had you as a rookie, and then he had Luke Fortner the last 2 years. Now he's got Mitch Morse going into his fourth year. Is he old hat enough to be able to do that quickly, or is that something that we're going to watch evolve over the course of the season?
I mean, it takes an off season, you know, OTAs, and by camp.
You figured out then.
Yeah, and then by camp you're flowing, and then by the season you should be hitting on all cylinders, and then guess what? That next year is going to be even better, and the year after that, and you know, so.
Should be a good one. We saw some young talent in Anton Harrison. He was one of the bright spots,
really
certainly
good
last year at right tackle, to come in and have that much success. When you came in, I wasn't here, so please fill me in a little bit, but did you feel like you had some anchor points to kind of work off when you got here? Did you feel like you learned as you went along? Was there some linemen that kind of coached you along the way?
Well, actually, when I got here, there wasn't very many, you know.
It was not a veteran group.
Yeah, it was not a veteran group. You know, there was Zane Beatles at left guard. I leaned on him a lot, but it was not a veteran group. So it was kind of like thrown into the fire.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I was starting since day one and kind of just figuring it out. But like I told Brian, you know, off air, like there was guys that I leaned on, like Paul Puzlesny and Mercedes Lewis, you know, how to be professionals, what it looked like, and just modeled my game and my career after them, even though they were different positions, but just how I went about my business. So yeah, just thrown to the fire and I came out all right.
Well, and look, Gus Bradley did not have a great record as the head coach here, but I liked his mentality about you have to be, in order to be a great teammate, you had to be a great individual. You had to come to work every
yeah.
day with the idea that it was on you to
yes.
be your best and not to worry, not to make it be about a veteran guy next to you
yes.
or someone else. It was all about you coming in the door every day focused entirely on being the best Brandon Linder you could be.
Yes. I mean, again, this is a team sport, right? This is the Jacksonville Jaguars. But at the end of the day, I'm an individual business, right?
Yeah.
Each player is an individual business. As soon as you're not performing or you're getting paid too much, they're gonna move on from you. So you have to do everything you can as Brandon Linder, as Trevor Lawrence, to go out there and put the best film out there, because that's your resume. That's what they're looking at, and that's how you play a long time in the league, and that's how you can stay with a team for a while, and that's how you can sign a contract extension.
When you have a locker room full of guys who come in every day wanting to be the best version of themselves, willing to work harder, willing to stay longer, willing to eat the right thing and do the right thing in terms of recovery and study, well, then you've got something, right? I mean, they have to be good players, right? We learned we didn't have enough good players when Gus was trying to implement that philosophy. But had we had enough good players, I think that philosophy is how it works in today's
game. Yeah, and then that becomes part of the culture. I mean, then you see other guys doing it. Well, I need to do that. Well, right? It's
yeah.
it's contagious, right? And I think in 17 when we had that success, we had a lot of good players.
Yep.
But you saw guys doing that, and that's what it takes to win.
Yeah.
Setting that standard. Stay with us here on Jags AM. Brandon's going to catch us up on what he's been up to, and we'll look ahead here on Jags AM. Jags fans, join us Tuesday, April 16th from 6:30 to 8:30 at Everbank Stadium for the Be Inspired by Jags Jobs event. That's presented by the Florida Lottery. You can register now at jaguars.com/brightfutures. Back here on Jags AM, Brandon, thank you so much for joining us today. It's been really nice to get your perspective on things.
Thank you for having me.
It is too bad that you weren't here when Brandon was playing.
I know.
He was the most challenging interviewee in the locker room.
Why is this?
Well, because he was focused. I mean, now that he's retired, he'll tell you, he was so focused on what he had to do next. But I mean, he's like, Brandon, you have time to talk?
No.
What do you want?
Uh-oh.
Sexton, what do you need?
Well, I was just going from one thing to the next, right? I come off the practice field, then it was a cool down stretch, ice tubs, got to get my food, the meetings. To me, I didn't have time for this, right? I'm trying to do everything I can to help the team win.
He was trying to be the best version of himself,
okay.
Which is, it's part of the relationship that you build. You kind of understand to give him his room. But as you've heard, the reason I wanted to hear from him was because he always had something good to say when I could stop him. But he was always so focused on it. So last year we did Jags All Access. Brandon came back up into town and we reconnected. I worked on a story for the Jags Legends alumni. And Brandon is up here today. And I said, will you do it? He's like, yeah, because you want to do some of this, right?
Yeah, I do. I mean, I want to be a part of this community. I want to be a part of this organization. I mean, I love Jacksonville. I mean, that was a strategic play on my part, too, to retire a Jaguar. There hasn't been many lifers.
Nope.
I plan on living here my whole life. I mean, I love Jacksonville. So, yeah, I want to be a part of it. I want to get back in the organization, you know, part of the community, still doing stuff, which I'm actually here also to talk about. Next year, we're going to be doing a fishing tournament, which start figuring out the logistics of that, but, you know, affiliated with the Jaguars and you know, bringing awareness to a great cause.
Guess who one of his best boys was when he was here?
The punter?
Loggeman.
Oh, Jeff Loggeman, the outdoorsman of the day.
And probably the punter, too. I mean, anybody who would hunt and fish, you would be offshore fishing. You'd be out in the woods hunting.
Yep. Yeah. Logan Cook, yep.
Yes.
Great friend of mine. And Jeff, my rookie year, he heard that I like to hunt and fish. And so... I think it was OTAs. We started talking, and from there, yeah, that relationship bloomed.
Now, ask him about his wife, because watch him beam from side to side.
Yes, tell us about your wife. Why not?
Yeah, no, she's amazing. She's in residency right now, going to be an orthopedic surgeon. And that's kind of why I'm not living here in Jacksonville for right now. But roughly 3 years, we'll be back up here and you know, calling this home. But she's incredible. She's finishing out her five-year residency and then yeah, orthopedic surgeon.
Wonderful.
She's amazing.
We love a power couple. That's so exciting.
Yep.
Brandon, thank you for joining us today. We hope to have you back soon. And we love your insight. So we'll hopefully see you in a couple weeks.
Thank you for having us.
Let's do it. All right, that's Jag Fam. We'll see you guys next week.